Psalm 5. These psalms are their prayers. They are music. David writes these particular psalms and this particular psalm as music for probably the congregation, for Israel. And it's also, like I said, a prayer. And so, you learn a lot about prayer in these psalms. And in this particular one, boldness in prayer. And I'll explain that as we go through it. The context here, and that it'll help when we read this psalm, the context is still from Psalm 3, 4, 5. The context is still David running from Absalom. So you're still dealing with that. And Absalom is David's son. Absalom is trying to take over the throne. He has gathered together an army. David hasn't been as visible a figure in Israel, and so Absalom has kind of got the upper hand. And David is running for his life from his son. And so Psalm 5, let's read it and learn about boldness in prayer. Psalm 5, verse 1 says, "Give ear to my words, O Lord. Consider my meditation. Hearken unto the voice of my cry, my King and my God, for unto thee will I pray. My voice shalt thou hear in the morning, O Lord. In the morning will I direct my prayer unto thee and will look up. For thou art not a God that hath pleasure in wickedness, neither shall evil dwell with thee. The foolish shall not stand in thy sight. Thou hatest all workers of iniquity. Thou shalt not destroy them that speak leasing. The Lord will abhor the bloody and deceitful man. But as for me, I will come into thy house in the multitude of thy mercy, and in thy fear will I worship toward thy holy temple. Lead me, O Lord, in thy righteousness. Because of mine enemies, make thy way straight before my face. For there is no faithfulness in their mouth. Their inward part is very wickedness. Their throat is an open sepulchre." Paul is going to quote that in Romans. "They flatter with their tongue. Destroy thou them, O God. Let them fall by their own counsels. Cast them out in the multitude of their transgressions, for they have rebelled against thee. But let all those that put their trust in thee rejoice. Let them ever shout for joy because thou defendest them. Let them also that love thy name be joyful in thee. For thou, Lord, wilt bless the righteous with favor, wilt thou compass him as with a shield." Let's pray, and then we'll talk about boldness and prayer. All right, Psalm 5. When I read through this psalm, you read the first verses, and that was the thing that struck me, was David's boldness with God. That he says in verse 1, "Give ear to my words, O Lord, consider my meditation, hearken unto the voice of my cry, my King, my God, unto thee will I pray." And David doesn't come to the Lord groveling. He doesn't come to the Lord, "Woe is me," and all that. When David speaks to the Lord, you realize and you understand he's very close to the Lord. It's not very long between the times he talks to God. It's not like, "I haven't talked to you in a while. We hadn't seen each other in months. And so I got this list of things that I need to get right with you. And I got this, I've got this sin piled up that's between you and I." And David's not, none of that's true of David. When David talks to the Lord, he comes to the Lord. He's got a what you would call a short account with God, I suppose. And he doesn't have to go through a mile of sin to get to God. It's just like, "All right, Lord, here we are again. This is what's happening. Listen to me. Here's my cry. Here's what's going on. Not that you didn't know what's going on, but here's what's happening. And I'm looking for an answer. I'm looking for you to consider the situation and answer this prayer of mine." He's not like, I suppose, he's not like sometimes Christians, we can be like this. When we have when we put it this way, when we decide to pray, we have so much time from the last time we prayed. There's so much getting right to do. You know, there's so much length between our fellowship with God. It's like, all right, Father, you know, we haven't talked in however long, and, you know, I'm just a sorry old dirt bag, and, you know, there's just nothing right and going on. And, I mean, David's just like, all right, Lord, you and I talked this morning. We're going to talk again. I'm going to lay it out to you. This is what's happening. This is what's going on, and I need your help. And David's close to God. He talks about it in the morning, verse 3. My voice shalt thou hear in the morning. O Lord, in the morning will I direct my prayer unto thee, and will look up. So, again, it's not been a long time. David doesn't come to God with, you know, it's been a long time since I've talked to you. It's like, in the morning I get with you, in the afternoon I get with you, in the evening I talk to you. You see that later on in Psalms. But he has a regular relationship with God, and that breeds boldness to come before God. It's not like a strained relationship, put it that way. There's not a break in the relationship. There's not, just a pile of things to get right. His relationship with the Lord is good enough that he has boldness to speak to God. And speak to God the way he does speak to him. Give ear to my words. I thought that was kind of an instruction, but telling God to listen up. But I know it's not the way he's saying it, but it just sounds like, you know, they've got a good relationship, he and the Lord. So the first thing I notice in verses 1 through 3 is boldness to speak to God. And the reason he has boldness is because he's got regular fellowship with God, regular relationship. He's constantly talking to God, and so they have a close relationship. And it's not unique. I mean, you don't have to be David to have a close relationship with God. Anybody can have a close relationship with God through Jesus Christ. You go through Jesus Christ, and you have a close relationship with the Father there. And so it's available to anybody. But the first thing I noticed was his boldness in his prayer. The second thing I notice is in verses 4 through 6, boldness to accept God's choices. Now, context and what we're about to read is everything. Remember, David is running from Absalom. Absalom is his son, and Absalom is the one David is mentioning in these verses as being on the wrong side of God. Verse 4. For thou art not a God that hath pleasure in wickedness, neither shall evil dwell with me. All right, now you need to get David's mind in this. When David says that, he has Absalom in mind as the one that's wicked. His son. Verse 5, the foolish shall not stand in thy sight. Thou hatest all workers of iniquity. We could say something about that. You know, yet, have you ever heard the phrase, God hates the sin but loves the sinner? Okay? That verse tells you there is no difference between the sin and the sinner. Because if there's no sinner, there's no sin. Later on, he's going to say their throat is an open sepulcher. Meaning their organs, their physical organs, are associated with transgression. The point is, there's not a difference. God doesn't separate out behavior from the person. He says, adulterer. Meaning that's the behavior and that's the person. He says, fornicator. That's the behavior, that's the person. It's not, well, I'm sleeping around, but I'm really a good person. That's the Christianity we've created, though. I can do what I want to, but I'm not really associated with my behavior, good or bad. Meaning I can disobey God however I want to, but I'm still a good person. Does that sound right at all in God's eyes? Not at all. I can do whatever I want to, and I'm still a good person. In our minds, maybe we think that, but according to God, he says, the workers of iniquity are associated with iniquity. And if they weren't working iniquity, they wouldn't be associated with iniquity. Meaning the only reason iniquity exists is because a person committing iniquity exists. That's the point. There's no separation between the two. The foolish, he says, shall not stand in thy sight. Thou hatest all workers of iniquity. That's not the point of what I'm getting to, but I want to mention that because we have in this Christianity that we've created in our minds that we can disobey God however much we want to, but in our minds we're still good Christians. That's not true. Your behavior determines or is determined or is the basis for God's judgment in the end. I mean, in the end, if you're saved, he says, every man's work shall be tried, whether it's good or evil. That's 1 Corinthians. Not every man's intention, not every man's thought of himself, of how he perceived himself, but what he actually did with his life. So what he actually did with his life, that's what counts. Not what he wanted to do with his life, not how he thought of himself in this life, but what he did with his life, that's his life. So if he uses his life to cheat on his wife, he's an adulterer. That's what he is. That there's not a separation from the sin and the sinner. That is the same thing. He's that person. So I think you understand the point. And that's what David says about God. Thou hatest all workers of iniquity. It's not he hates the sin, but he loves the sinner. Now he gave sinners an opportunity and he loved the world. When Jesus Christ died on the cross, he loves the world. And he offers that free payment to anybody who will accept it. It is a payment that's already been made for your sin. And it is available to any sinner that wants to partake of that. But if a sinner doesn't want to partake of that, there is no separation from the sin and the sinner. They're the same thing. Well, look in verse 9. I'll show you again here. For there is no faithfulness in their mouth. Their inward part is very wickedness. Their throat is an open sepulcher. They flatter with their tongue. He's associating their physical body parts with sin. This is the thing that's sinning. This guy's tongue is the thing that's speaking the lie. There's not a separation. It's not like he's speaking lies, but he's a great guy. It's not like he's a she's a great Christian, but she's also, you know, busting up her family. There's no separation there. So when he deals with this in verses 4-6, David understands about Absalom. The decisions Absalom is making, his son, are contrary to the will of God. They are evil in God's sight, and there is no difference between an evil man and Absalom. He is the evil man. It's not I have a great son who does bad things. It's I have a wicked son. For thou, verse 4, art not a God that hath pleasure in wickedness, neither shall evil dwell with thee. The foolish shall not stand in thy sight. Thou hatest all workers of iniquity. Thou shalt destroy them that speak leasing. The Lord will abhor the bloody and deceitful man. The second point in this is this. Boldness to accept God's choices. And like I said, the context is critical. Because when David speaks of the evildoer here in these verses, he's talking about his child. Now, I've heard preachers say this, and it is probably 99% true. Blood is thicker than the Bible. And when God steps into a family and says, this child is out of line, 99% of the time, I just say that percentage because I've seen it so much, 99% of the time, parents will defend the child and forget God and let God go with whatever his ideas are and defend the child. David is different. David deals with this thing and he says, you know what? My son is on the wrong side of God right now. And that's just the way it is. My son is on the wrong side of God, and if he stays on the wrong side of God, the judgment of God is going to come down on my child. I'm not going to defend his actions. I'm not going to step up for him. I know he's in the wrong place, and it's wrong for me to step in front of him and say, now wait a minute, God, you don't understand. He's my child. Boldness to accept God's choices. David knows Absalom is on the wrong side of God in this matter. And he accepts God's assessment of his own child. That is, I don't know how you can teach that. I don't know how folks can get that. But us, we are, as parents, as family, that decision right there that David makes is probably one of the hardest decisions to come to as a dad, as a mom, as a parent, to say, all right, Lord, you're right. My child is wrong. And my child is on the wrong side of you. And I'm not coming to his rescue because I can't do anything for him at this point, and I'm not going to defend his behavior. So David says that, and context is everything. You just read through that stuff and you think, yeah, evil men, bad men, God's mad at him. Yeah, that's great. Well, when you realize he's talking about his child, that's different. He's accepted God's choices in the matter. So boldness to accept what God says about this thing. Then I notice another thing. We could go on and on about that, but you get the idea. That's a tough deal. I mean, the stories abound there's so many stories that come to mind. When kids grow up and become teenagers and then, you know, all of a sudden they've got boyfriends, girlfriends, whatever. And now the pastor's wrong for saying something. Some of you may have seen stuff like that happen, but you understand the idea. Eventually, David here deals with this situation. And he says, you know what? I understand, Lord, that you are mad. You hate evil. You hate wickedness. And at this point in time, my child, my son, is the wicked man. He is the one on the wrong side. Then you get in verses 7 and 8, boldness because of the fear of the Lord, which doesn't sound, it sounds kind of contradictory, but I want to show you a couple verses about it. Look in verse 7. David says, but as for me, I will come into thy house in the multitude of thy mercy, and in thy fear will I worship toward thy holy temple. Lead me, O Lord, in thy righteousness because of mine enemies. Make thy way straight before thy face. Boldness because of the fear of the Lord. You know, if you fear God, you fear the right thing, you fear God, you'll have courage in the right areas. The reason, you know, we talked about Stephen and Philip this morning. You know, the reason Stephen had courage before a council, had courage to face down people who wanted to kill him, was because he wasn't afraid of the mob, he was afraid of God. So he feared God, so he led his life in such a way in the fear of the Lord that it gave him confidence in other areas. Let me look at a verse. Look in Proverbs chapter 14. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 26. And we'll make it a little application to this. Proverbs 14 and verse 26. In the fear of the Lord is strong confidence. That sounds like a contradiction. In the fear of the Lord is strong confidence. But here's an illustration. All right. You do wrong, for instance, somebody does wrong. I'll say somebody does wrong. Somebody that does wrong is looking over their shoulder all the time. Somebody that does wrong is worried about who's after them. All right, so they have no confidence in what they're doing. I mean, it's just we know we've stolen, and so every time we see a police car, we slow down and we turn on our blinker and we make sure nobody. You understand? Somebody who's done wrong is afraid of the wrong things. Someone who's a wicked, the Bible says, the wicked flee when no man pursueth. On the other hand, somebody who's doing right, somebody who has respect for the law, someone who has respect for God, someone who honors God with their life. All right, if you, as a child, you did what mom and dad said. Well, on the other hand, say you didn't do what mom and dad said. Well, you're wondering when the belt's coming out, and you know, hopefully they don't ever find out this and all that stuff. But if you do what they say, you got confidence. Hey, I've done this. I don't expect to be judged, or I don't expect to be chastened for this because I've done the right thing. That's the fear of the Lord. That strong confidence. So someone who lives their life in the fear of the Lord, who is constantly thinking about, okay, what does the Lord think about this? What is God's opinion about this thing? And constantly living under that umbrella, well, they got confidence in what they're doing. They're, in the fear of the Lord, he says, is strong confidence. So there's boldness. Go back to Psalm. There is boldness because of fear of the Lord. He said, in thy fear, verse 7, in thy fear will I worship toward thy holy temple. Boldness because of the fear of the Lord. I won't show you any. I think you get the idea. Boldness because he's afraid of the right things. The Bible says the fear of man bringeth a snare. So you get afraid of man, and you get fallen into traps you lose confidence. I mean, you're just worried about what's going to happen from day to day, but you fear the Lord and you do the right thing and the chips fall where they do. But you're just not worried about it. You got confidence in it. Boldness because of the fear of the Lord. That's the thing. There's boldness there in David because he fears God. He fears God. If there's, you know, there's a lot of things that could describe our culture. Fear of God went out the window long ago. Fear of God is so far removed from our culture at this point, and even from Christians' lives. No fear of God. You fear God, and you'll have confidence. Be doing the right thing. You won't worry about what's coming around the corner. So David is bold because of his fear of the Lord there. All right, another thing, two more things here. Boldness for the Lord's sake. Verse 9, he says, for there is no faithfulness in their mouth. Their inward part is very wickedness. Their throat is an open sepulcher. They flatter with their tongue. Destroy thou them, O God. Let them fall by their own counsels. Cast them out in the multitude of their transgressions. For they have rebelled against who? Thee. Their problem is with you, Lord. And because their problem is with you, I know you're going to deal with it. Boldness for the Lord's sake. I'll give you a couple cross references here. But before I do, David understands that the Lord will protect his name. The Lord will protect his name. Oh, let's show you a verse here. Look in Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 10. Proverbs 18:10. Boldness for the Lord's sake. This is boldness, knowing the Lord's going to defend his name. You know what? I don't know. I've said it multiple times. You know why you pray in Jesus' name? So he'll do something because of his own sake. Not because I'm something special and I've brought some powerful prayer to this thing and I'm able to be eloquent or whatever. Lord, no. You're the basis for answering this, and I come in Jesus' name because it's on his basis that I'm even here. Proverbs 18, verse 10, the name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous runneth into it and is safe. So the Lord's going to defend his own name. So David uses that and says that and has boldness because of that. Because he understands these folks that are against him are on the wrong side of the Lord, and God's going to defend himself. So David just needs to get where God is, under his banner, under his name, and let God defend himself. So David says that. They've rebelled against thee. You don't, Lord, have to intervene because I'm hurt. People get hurt. You don't have to intervene because this is a painful experience for me. But Lord, your name is on the line here, and that's why you ought to intervene. Because I don't want your name drug through the mud. Your name is a strong tower. The righteous, as he says, run into it. You're going to defend yourself. And all of my reasons, my personal reasons, my problems may not amount to enough for you to answer this prayer, but one thing that does amount to enough is the fact that your name is stamped on this thing, and if your name gets drugged through the mud, that'll be a problem. Moses even said that one day. He said, the Lord said, I am going to destroy all of these people that I brought out of Egypt, and I'm going to start over with you, Moses. I'm tired of dealing with their complaints. I don't want to hear it anymore. I am going to wipe out this people, and I'm going to start over with you. And Moses said, well, Lord, if you do that, all the folks that watch are going to say, the Lord took these people out of Egypt to kill them, and your name is going to be on the line. Now, I know he didn't, point his finger in his face or anything, but that was the argument. Lord, your name is on the line here, and if you just kill everybody, people are going to think, well, you stamped your name on this people, and you killed these people. So, Lord, don't kill these people for the sake of you. People are going to talk bad about you, because if you do this, they're going to think you're bad. Your name is on this. And David says the same thing. Lord, your name is on this. These folks are rebelling against you. They are against you. And so based on that, I know you're going to fight for it. I know you're going to defend me because I'm under your wings. I'm under you. Boldness for the Lord's sake. Now, I give you another little thing with context here. In verse 10, he says, destroy thou them, O God, let them fall by their own counsels. One of the interesting things that happens with David in this whole episode is there are two counselors that give Absalom advice. One of the counselors is Ahithophel. Ahithophel is Bathsheba's grandpa. Ahithophel hates David. For a while, he and David are, they are friends. They are, they work together. He's kind of like the chief of staff, I guess, on David's board there, whatever. Ahithophel turns against David, and he starts to give Absalom advice. Absalom looks for some advice about how to get to David. Ahithophel says, well, here's what we ought to do. We ought to get an army together of 12,000 men, and we'll hunt David until he's tired of running, and we'll kill him out in the wilderness somewhere. Essentially, I mean, that's the gist of the whole thing. And so he suggests that they get 12,000 men together and just hunt David until David can't be hunted anymore, until he's exhausted and wore out, and then you kill him. Then there's another guy that gives counsel. And I'm going to show you where this happens. Look in 2 Samuel chapter 17. Well, look in verse 1, and you'll see Ahithophel's advice. Second Samuel 17, verse 1. Here's the counsel of Ahithophel. Moreover, Ahithophel said unto Absalom, let me now choose out 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue after David this night. And I will come upon him while he is weary and weak-handed, and will make him afraid, and all the people that are with him shall flee, and I will smite the king only, and I will bring back all the people unto thee. The man whom thou seekest is as if all returned, so all the people shall be in peace. And the saying pleased Absalom well and all the elders of Israel. Then said Absalom, call now Hushai the Archite also, and let us hear likewise what he saith. This is going to be an answer to what David just prayed in Psalm 5. Let their counsels destroy themselves. Hushai is going to come in there, and he's going to give some other advice. I don't want to read the whole chapter, but you get down to verse 14. Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. For the Lord had appointed, now here's the answer to the prayer. For the Lord had appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. Then said Hushai unto Zadok and to Abiathar the priest, thus and thus did Ahithophel counsel Absalom and the elders of Israel, and thus and thus have I counseled. Now therefore, send quickly to tell David, saying, lodge not this night in the plains of the wilderness, but speedily pass over, lest the king be swallowed up and all the people that are with him. Two counselors, Ahithophel, Hushai. Hushai tells Absalom, don't do what Ahithophel said. Wait it out or something like that. But essentially, Ahithophel's counsel is bad counsel. David knows the area. David knows war. David will surround your men and he will kill your men if you send them out. And so that's what Hushai says. He says, if you send 12,000 out, David is a man of war. David understands this country. David will have those men surrounded and killed before the morning. And so Absalom says, okay, I like what Hushai said. Ahithophel, you know, thanks for the advice, but no thanks. Ahithophel goes off and kills himself. He hangs himself. Hushai is on David's side. But Absalom doesn't know that. That is an answer to prayer in Psalm 5. Absalom, no, I'm throwing all these names around. Absalom, try to keep up, please try to keep up here. Absalom takes Hushai's advice, takes his counsel, and it ends up destroying Absalom's life. Because that was God's answer to prayer here. David said, let their own counsel destroy them. What does he say in verse 10? Destroy thou them, O God, let them fall by their own counsels. Well, 2 Samuel 17 describes the two counsels that are given to Absalom. The one, if Absalom had taken Ahithophel's counsel, David would be dead. But God turned that thing around so that Absalom likes Hushai's advice and says, no, we're going to go with that. And before you know it, Absalom is out of the picture and no longer a threat. And it's a terrible thing in David's family, but there are some reasons for that. But the point is, he prays that their counsel would turn again on them, and that's what happens. And you read about that counsel in 2 Samuel 17. There's boldness there, going back to the original point, boldness there for the Lord's sake. Let these people who are against you fall on their own sword that they've created. Let them be destroyed. I mean, it's like Haman, you know. Let him be hanged by his own gallows. Let his own ideas destroy his life, and that's what happens. So there's boldness for the Lord's sake. Just get on the right side of God, and you'll be in the right place. And then lastly, boldness because God is happy with this. Verse 11, but let all those, back to Psalm 5, verse 11, but let all those that put their trust in thee rejoice. Let them ever shout for joy because thou defendest them. Let them also that love thy name be joyful in thee. For thou, Lord, wilt bless the righteous. With favor wilt thou compass him as with a shield. Boldness because God is happy. Boy, if we can make God happy, that's all I want to do. If God's happy with what's going on, you can't get any better than that. If people aren't happy but God's happy, you know what? You can't get any better than that. Boldness because God's happy. And David knows he's on the right side of God in this thing. Notice God's favor compasses the righteous or compasses the righteous as with the shield. So that thing is like his favor is all around someone who's in a right relationship with him. God's favor is all around him like a shield. You know, there may not be any promise of physical protection. Now, in this case, it looks like there is. There may be no promise of physical protection, but if God's happy, that's the best place to be. There's nothing, put it this way. There is nothing that can replace God saying, well done. You cannot replace that with anything else. And when God says, well done, that is exactly the place you want to be in. Notice he talks about his favor being all around somebody, like a shield would be. And it reminds me of this. It reminds me of Psalm 23 where he says, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Like, you know, I'm headed toward the mark, and when I look back, goodness and mercy follow me. I look back, and I just see all the goodness and mercy God's along the way. Goodness and mercy follow me, so he is someone who is in a right relationship with God. God's favor is all around him. Goodness and mercy following, pressing towards the mark ahead. Can't ask for a better position or situation to be in. And I think about that with that psalm, goodness and mercy shall follow me. And looking back and you just see all the time, I know you guys have testimonies and stuff like that. You look back and you just see God's goodness. God was good back there. God was good back there. God was good back there. You know what it is? That's favor. That's favor surrounding God's people like a shield. Ahead of you, behind you, it's all around you. God's favor. There's boldness because God is happy. And boy, if God is happy, that's you can't ask for anything more than that. And when God's not happy, you can't be in a worse position than that. No matter how right you are with other people, no matter how right you are with whatever the case may be, you and I are on this earth. The Bible says God created in Revelation chapter 4 for his pleasure. But it's not that his pleasure is bad for us. His pleasure is a good thing. I think I mentioned it in the conference. You know, if we could just realize that the things that make God joyful are also going to be the things that make you joyful. But you just don't realize that. The things that bring peace with God, the things that bring peace are the things that bring peace with you. Just don't realize that. The things that make God happy are going to make you happy. But we just don't realize that stuff. We don't think about that stuff. We think that everything else is going to make us happy, and sometimes God's inconvenient, and sometimes God's all that. Yeah, he's inconvenient to the flesh. But in the long run, that's where joy is. That's where the right relationship is. That's where the joy is. There's boldness there because God's happy, and that's what David says. He's in the right place with God. He knows he's in the right place with God. I'd say that's bold. He knows he's in the right place with God. He knows he's on the right side of God, and he knows God's happy with him. And there isn't any better place to be, and there aren't any better words to hear than well done. And I pray that we would hear that. I pray that we would be in that position. I know you go in and out and all that stuff, but make sure the direction is right. You're headed in the right direction. I know you make mistakes along the way, but make sure you're headed in the right direction. Father, thank you so much for your words. I pray this has been helpful. Lord, there's a lot in